Before we start with the first discussion topic, does anyone else want to make any opening remarks? Wayne?
A question for Lynn. And the meetings or the in-depth discussions you have with the auditors, to what extent is management part of those discussions?
We make sure at least once, and probably most often, it's been more often than that, that we have the what everyone considers to be the executive session. And we ask for an executive session with not just the auditor, but an executive session with the auditor, with the CFO, with the CEO, with the internal auditor, and also in the case of the mutual fund, because we have a chief compliance officer, we also have a separate meeting with the chief compliance officer. So one or a couple meetings a year are longer meetings just because you want to make sure you have an executive session with all those people, and we think it's important. So we turn around and take the time to do it. Where we've had situations where, for one reason or another, I think the auditor would be concerned about something, I have asked everyone, including legal counsel, including our own board legal counsel, to leave the room. So I remember, so we were discussing last night, outside legal counsel one time got kind of bent out of shape and perturbed because the audit committee chair said they're no longer to be in the room. But, you know, we wanted a good, frank, open discussion, which is what the Blue Ribbon Panel report really drove at and recommended. And I wanted to make sure that there was nothing that would, from the auditor's perspective, because it didn't matter what I thought. What matters is what the auditor thought and what they're willing to tell me. If there was anything that might constrain them, I didn't want it in the room. So we asked external auditor, and this was in a situation where first time with the auditor, they hadn't gotten to know us, and nothing particularly wrong, but I wanted them to feel that they knew we wanted to hear whatever they had to say that was important, and it was going to stay in that room with us, but we wanted to get that communication. So as we're getting up to speed with the members, several meetings, we excluded our own legal counsel just to make sure that they got comfortable and knew that they could communicate and talk to us. And, you know, it just turned out great, and it really opened up the conversations, I think, and worked very well. And the whole issue wasn't about, you know, who can tag one another, but it was about how do we all work together to really make this thing work, and it worked out very well.
I have a question or two that I'd like to just follow up on, if I may. First, to Peggy, you made a comment about some concern about communications being in writing when you put your attorney's hat on. And I've often observed sometimes committees, when they have their attorneys put the minutes together for audit committee meetings, they put those hats on as well, and the minutes say we discussed X, Y, or Z without, you know, any sort of robust indication of really the discussion that took place. So if that were the case, do you have any concern about what the record might be with respect to the audit if the communication itself wasn't in writing about the significant risk matters, for instance, that Lynn may have just talked about a minute ago or something like that, or sensitive accounting policies, or, you know, the nature of the accounting policies, if that weren't in writing, and then the extent to which minutes may or may not be robust because of the different cultures in companies and the attorneys as to their views as to what gets into audit committee or board minutes. So I guess the question I'm raising is the record of the examination, the audit, and, if you will, the ability for either an internal inspection or a PCOB inspection to say, well, how good were the communications, and therefore the record of that.
I think it's more important to have the dialogue and the discussion than have a he said, she said, because I actually think that would cool discussion if you had a he said, she said. Again, the most important thing is to have the dialogue. It's to have the discussion. It's to ask the questions. It's to probe. It's to get the answers. And not necessarily say to someone, and by the way, I'm going to document everything you say, because you might be reluctant to say it. And I do believe, because of the fear of litigation, that it would become, to the extent that you require that in writing, or, as you say, you know, a lot more meat on what was actually said and said instead of saying it was discussed and was said, you will get more boilerplate. That's just, I think, our culture. That's the world. And for me, it's, you know, it's getting that discussion. You know, it's getting that dialogue. It's probing and not whether you have three more sentences in minutes.
Thanks, Peggy, for your thoughts on that. And then I might maybe turn that over to Jamie as well to get your views. You commented, let me see if I got my notes right here, that how can the PCAOB drive a robust dialogue was, I think, your point, and then you thought it was very, very important that there be a robust dialogue, very similar to the comments that Peggy made. And I think you also indicated that at the companies in which you've served as a financial officer, you thought that there were robust dialogues between the auditors and the audit committee. To what extent do you think communications being in writing or not being in writing or other cultural aspects enable those communications to be robust in your environment, and how might we encourage that elsewhere?
You know, I guess whether the communications are in writing or verbal, I would say that I think written communications often can provide an important outline for a discussion. But, you know, whether the written communication is 3,000 words or whether it's 30 words, I really believe that the dialogue is most important. And, in fact, the more sometimes people are required to write down or put onto lists, I think sometimes you can have the effect of losing the forest through the trees in terms of what you're really trying to get out of a dialogue. So, you know, again, I don't disagree that we ought to have a list or we ought to have some form of written communication, but again, I think the substance and the focus ought to focus on how can we elicit, how can we ensure that the right parties are really talking about things. You know, culturally and just generally watching behaviors over the years, you know, I think so much goes into the selection of the right people to be lead partners on engagements and having the right personalities in the room in terms of people who are self-confident and smart and, you know, willing to dig into issues but yet willing to, you know, engage in a debate. And that goes for both the lead engagement partners as well as, you know, the members of the actual audit committee. You know, I can think back to some of the most active people on audit committees have been, you know, sometimes people you would absolutely expect and other times people who, you know, maybe a Harvard professor, you know, someone that you think might approach things from a more academic perspective and actually raises all the right questions on all the right risks at all the right times. So, you know, a lot of I think a lot of the robust character is really derived from the qualifications of the individual sometimes, so which is a little bit more difficult to govern.
Thanks. Back to Peggy.
I do point out, too, that the SEC has a rule proposal for more disclosure on the qualifications of directors and why they were placed on certain committees. So I think you're going to see some of what Jamie is saying in writing on why so-and-so is, you know, on the audit committee. But I, you know, I do agree. You've got to get the right auditor, and you've got to get the right directors on your audit committee for this to work.
Just one final observation before I turn it back to Barbara, unless there's other comments. Is that I heard a fair amount of, from I think from all three, of you, and thank you very much for your input, that maybe what's needed as much as some improvements in the audit standard, and I think you did say that some enhancements could be made, Jamie, I certainly heard you say that, was best practices for audit committees. And I thought that maybe I've heard you say that we might be in a position, or somebody's in a position, to again publish something with respect to best practices for audit committees. That's been done obviously a number of times through Blue Ribbon Commissions and elsewhere, but it sounded like I thought that you were suggesting maybe this is time again for publication of best practices by audit committees. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, and you know, Lynn gave me some credit. Let me give him credit. When I heard him speak many years ago, I wrote all those questions down and gave them to the audit committee chair and suggested that perhaps he ask those questions. I think it to the extent that you are advising audit committees, it is very helpful if you can show them what best practices are and give them suggestions. So I know that would be welcomed. Any number of audit committee chairs are involved now in those best practices groups. I know there's a few, and I'm sure some of the auditors in the room probably have been invited to speak at them.
Thanks, Peggy. Damon Silvers?
I have no problem with best practices, although I'm not sure that's really what the PCAOB's role is, at least per se. It strikes me that because when regulatory bodies start issuing best practices, it tends to signal to me at least that somebody's ducking. Private sector bodies, that's what they do. They issue best practices. Regulators are supposed to regulate. But I think there's a way of weaving through this and doing something useful in an area where obviously you don't have regulatory powers. You don't regulate audit committees. And that, I think, is that you have a body of data from inspections that nobody else has. And perhaps there's a body of learning that can be distilled from that data around audit committees that would be helpful to audit committees, obviously without disclosing anything confidential. And that strikes me as something, quite appropriate. It might be that there is some way that there's some appropriate role for the SEC in all of this. I'm sure they'll let you know if they think that. But it seems to me that would be the way I would proceed. I don't think you ought to get in the habit of sort of signaling to the communities that you deal with that you're in the best practices business.
Thanks, Damon. Lynn?
2 points, Marty. Back to your first question about documentation first, and then back to Damon's. On the issue of documentation, I remember back when David Becker was at the SEC, his first stint as general counsel, this question came up, and David at the time felt very strongly that there ought to be good documentation in the minutes, that people just act differently. When you do a better job at documentation, it has an impact on how the board acts and all. And having now sat in a number of boardrooms, I think that's true. And it's not about a gotcha, but it's about whether or not you've really done your job. And if you have a problem not documenting or have a problem documenting something, it probably tells you there's something wrong going on in the boardroom. So I, with David, am a strong believer of better documentation. What we do know and what we have clear evidence of is that right now there is really no documentation requirements to speak of. There is the requirement that the auditor does communicate certain things, which they do, I think, to the audit committee. But with such lax documentation requirements, we know what it has absolutely gotten us is boilerplate disclosures and boilerplate communication from the auditor to the audit committee on those required things. It's become a checklist. I put together a standard form letter, boom, 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 give it to the audit committee, it goes into the file, so I've met the requirement. So what we do know is that lax documentation has, in fact, guaranteed that we get boilerplate, and we know that. That's what the facts are in, the evidence is in. So I personally think more documentation is better, and it won't result in less communication. It will probably result in better communication, certainly my experience. On the second issue on best practices, I would echo very much so what Damon said. The PCAOB doesn't have authority to regulate audit committees. And I think it does feel like if you're putting out best practices, you're kind of punting as a regulator. On the other hand, I think if you put out best practices, there'll be audit committees that take a look at it and will probably upgrade their what they do in some instances, in other instances, because of the attorneys and what we've seen them do with the outside communication. They'll just tell people, hey, it's not required, you don't need to do it, and there'll be some audit committees that don't pay attention to it. To the extent that audit committees aren't adequately getting information to investors that they've asked for. And for example, in the Treasury Committee, in the group that Damon chaired, there was a very strong feedback came back that investors want to know who our audit partner is. You know, disclose that and get that to us. And that's important to us. And so that type of disclosures aren't within your bailiwick, though. The audit committees, for the most part, are either in the bailiwick of the stock exchange and their listing requirements and or the SEC. And so really probably most of this would have to come out of the SEC if you're talking about honest-to-goodness regulation and it's going to be outside. Would best practices be a bad idea? No, I think it'd be a good idea. I mean, we've been at this for seven decades. What's another year or two, you know? I think it would be good, and it further things along. I think it'd help audit committees. It'd probably help auditors. But if we continue to have the lack of disclosures, the lack of information going to investors, then I think the SEC has to step into that void, not the PCAOB.
Thanks, Lynn. Jamie, is your card up again?
I just wanted to add a few comments to Damon's and Lynn's remarks. And just to be clear, I do believe that the PCAOB should consider rule enhancement, both in terms of the types of discussions and communications as well as how they're carried out. But I also think it's important to remind ourselves that the PCAOB is in a really important position to provide perspective on auditor and audit committee communications, given their role in the inspection process and the various things they see in carrying out their responsibilities, you know, both in terms of what works, you know, situations where there have been issues, you know, what didn't work and what was missing, as well as just common themes they see on good governance in auditor and audit committee communication. And so I think, you know, coupling that with a broad study actually could help the PCAOB to foster compliance and promote a culture of substantive and effective communication, which I think is important.
Thanks. Galen Hansen?
Yeah, yesterday we talked a little bit about quality, and I agree with Lynn, what Lynn you're saying about the Treasury Committee and that recommendation to disclose who the audit committee, who seems preposterous, but who the audit partner would be. I think you'd go further than that and say, and his qualifications and also the engagement quality reviewer. But I just wanted to point out, and again, we talked about quality control standard number 7 yesterday. Paragraph 49 of that requires that disclosure to those in charge of governance. And I think this same thing could be done by the PCAOB. I don't consider that a best practice. I consider that part of appropriate disclosure to the audit committee by the auditor.
Thanks, Galen. I'd like to thank Jamie and Peggy and Lynn for taking the time to contribute to so much to this meeting by sharing your experiences as audit committee members and corporate governance. I think we'll take a short break right now for about 30 minutes. And is that right? 30 minutes? About 30 minutes. And then we'll get back, and Barbara will take us through the questions that we've teed up for this session. Thank you.